Today my guest is Chris Love. How are you, Chris?
Doing well.
What do you do?
What do I do? Primarily, I try to focus on mobile web, HTML5 related stuff. I try to tell people that I live in the Ajax layer now. I don't do so much in the server side. I still get a little greasy with C# and MVC and the web API stuff, but I generally live doing JavaScript and markup and a lot of CSS stuff now.
That's pretty fun. And the reason you chose JavaScript to do this on mobile devices is for the cross-platform piece of it? Is that the idea?
Well, yeah. I mean, naturally, I'm a web guy. I've been doing web since 92, which I think we had like Mosaic barely running at the time. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing web for a long time.
Yeah.
And about 2 years ago, I really started diving, actually more, a little more than 2 years ago, I started diving into mobile stuff, and especially as it relates to enterprise mobility needs. And I kept trying to evaluate, and I kind of tried over and over again to force the native thing. And there was just too much restrictions on what you could and couldn't do. Especially, I don't like the App Store deployment model where somebody else can decide if your application is good enough or not, instead of letting the free market or your customers decide. And then when it comes to enterprise, I didn't like Apple or Microsoft having a say in if my business application was good enough or not.
Okay, so when you create a mobile application, it's actually a website. It's a URL yes. that people are pointing to through their mobile browser.
Right, and there's a whole lot that I've learned through trial and error, to be honest with you, over these past 2 years of how to architect applications. And I've really had to re-architect how I approach web development in general. For example, I try not to do what I call the classic request response model with websites. I go with single page applications now.
Okay.
And the native applications have driven us to make really good user experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's a big bonus. When you look at an application like Flipboard, when you first get the iPad, for example, you know, you've got this immersive experience in basically what is a newsreader. Mm-hmm. And it just rethinks how you list those titles, and it turns it into something that's a little more alive and something you want to connect with more. And they also, you know, they added some other creature comforts like quickly retweeting or sharing on social media, which if you follow my Twitter stream, you know I do. So
I follow your Twitter stream. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very busy, isn't it?
Yes.
And you can thank a Flipboard for kind of accelerating all that kind of stuff, because it made it so easy.
Uh-huh. And that's a sort of thing you can actually do in JavaScript and HTML.
If you go to coredropstimpanis.com, it's probably a year old at this point, but there actually is a demo where they do the JavaScript and the CSS transforms and media, the web keyframe animations.
A lot of that's gotten
to do the page flips.
Okay, and a lot of that's gotten easier with the advent of HTML5.
A lot of the HTML5, CSS3, and also, too, the browsers have gotten so much better with the JavaScript support and performance.
Yep.
You look at where they were just 3 or 4 years ago compared to today. And, you know, like Internet Explorer is, like, super fast compared to IE8.
Yep.
But then you look at how fast Chrome is, and then you got advances in the processors, and they're offloading stuff to GPU more and more, so you basically got more stuff so the animations can go faster. And there's a lot of relearning that we as developers need to do so that we can do these things efficiently.
This is a paradigm shift in what the web is for and what browsers are for.
Right.
The whole World Wide Web was introduced essentially as a way of sharing documents.
Exactly.
Hyperlinked documents.
Back in 92, I was an undergrad in college. And I was fortunate enough to get on a research project, got my own little desk office, and I was on the fiber at the university.
Nice.
And
North Carolina State?
NC State.
That's a good school.
And, I started immediately, looking for stuff and finding things. And there was Gopher and all that kind of stuff going on back then. And it was just this great thing. And then I started learning how to do markup. And the university gave us our own little personal space to host things that actually were accessible through HTTP, the regular URLs. And so I started, pushing stuff up there that I was doing research on, things like
documents.
That.
Yeah.
You know, I could get a paper published. And I kind of thought about it the other day. I was kind of doing an early form of blogging about the research that I was working on.
But now it's shifted. Now the web is a platform.
It's a platform.
Hosting, it's deploying and delivering applications.
It's a consumer experience, and that rocketed right after that time.
Right. It's almost like an operating system.
It really is. When you look at Chrome OS and you look at what Firefox is doing with the Firefox OS, and they're actually going to, they've got phones that you can buy now running Firefox OS. And, you know, I really like that model as a web developer, obviously. But, I mean, you go look at the Chromebooks, and they're, I mean, they're very performant. They're, but they're $200, $250. I think there's going to be a more expensive one this summer with faster processors and stuff. And you look at how many apps are in, like, the Chrome store. Like, Angry Birds is one of the first ones they had out there, just to show you could do it in HTML5 and everything. So there's a lot you can do. And as I go around speaking to groups and just talking to customers, enterprises and stuff, I think there's this disconnect with what you can and can't do. There's a lot we can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of understanding how we need to do it, and there's got to be a lot of rethinking.
Okay.
And these devices that I got in front of me, I've got a Surface and an iPad, and I've got a Windows phone, I've got some other phones in my bag. But one of the things that they all have in common is they're bringing in a new natural user interface called touch.
Yeah.
And it's gotten extremely popular because of these devices. So we're not typing on keyboards as much as we used to, or using a mouse, really. We're actually touching the data elements.
Right.
And you've got the talk on data visualization, and you know, you can immerse yourself into that. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past, it was more of a static thing. And I kind of have this abstract concept where I'm like, we got to rethink how we make that bridge between our users and the data.
Okay.
And make that, bring that data a little closer to the user, or the user a little closer to the data. And as the, and you think about it, as computers have gotten smaller, that kind of gap between us and the data is getting smaller. We're getting more intimate with it as the screens get closer to us and we hold them in our hands and stuff. You know, you talk about how a phone is a very personal device. It's very, it's your extension. It's like an extension of your hand and your brain, kind of thing. And so we've got these new natural user interfaces, you know, Kinect's coming up and stuff like that. So you got voice and text, Siri, and the other voice recognitions that we have on all these devices. And that's becoming very common now. And we, as developers, need to understand we've got to take advantage of those things in ways we never thought of in the past. And we've got to probably accelerate how we do that, which means we have to rethink application development in general.
So this natural user interface you're mentioning, the touch and the voice, there's a lot of work being done on desktop applications.
Mm-hmm.
So WPF applications, for example, they fully support that, and there's a lot of tools for making that easier. It's built into Windows 8. It's built into the iPad. Is that also possible on a web application as well?
Right now, I don't think voice is really something you could consistently do. There is a media capture API.
Okay.
It's not fully supported by the vendors. Touch is absolutely supported, but it's kind of in a fragmented state.
Hmm.
So when Apple introduced the iPhone and the iPod Touch, they wanted people to be able to, or developers to be able to pick up on those touch actions in their web application. So they created a touch API, and it has a few events: touch start, touch move, touch cancel, and end.
Okay.
And they're very parallel to mouse.
This is
the mouse events.
A thick client though. This is a web thing, right?
This is for the web.
This is for the web. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So they created those events, and they were really parallel to the mouse events.
Okay.
And you would think, well, why didn't they just use the mouse events? And well, it's a different thing. A mouse is a precise pointing instrument, so you get a very exact XY coordinate.
Yeah.
The fingers generally are like 11 millimeters in diameter.
So it's less precise.
So it's a very less precise, right. And you got a big fat thing, so we call fat fingers and things like that. And
you also have 10 of them.
Yes, you have 10 of them. So like one of the things about the Microsoft Surface is it can actually support all 10 fingers hitting the device at one time. And in fact, the minimum requirement to be a Windows 8 certified device, touch device, is to have support for 5 touch points minimum.
Hmm.
And so those points are all firing, and it's a matter of managing where all those touch points are, which one's the primary, those kind of things. And so if you've spent much time with, especially going around the web and you're hitting sites, and I know you and I are both sports fans, so I bring up a lot, you know, in my talks, how I'm trying to hit like little tiny links on ESPN or CBS Sportsline, and I'm constantly, instead of hitting the Texas Rangers, it takes me to the Seattle Mariners, you know, which, you know, I don't have anything against the Mariners and all, but I'm a Rangers fan, so I wanted to go, you know, to that homepage, and the next time I go back, I'm like, I'm going to hit the Rangers this time, but no, it takes me to the Oakland A's page.
Let me get this straight. You live in Philadelphia.
I'm stuck in Philadelphia, yes.
You played football at North Carolina State.
I did, yes.
And you're a fan of the Texas Rangers from Arlington, Texas. What's up with that?
Well, I grew up just south of Fort Worth.
Okay.
And I lived there till sixth grade, and then I moved to St. Louis for a little bit, and I actually became a Cardinal fan there, too.
Okay.
They went to the series in 85 when I was in junior high. It was a great experience. And then I moved to North Carolina right after that, and I was there for till 2009 when I went down to Florida for a little stint, and now I'm up in Philly.
You're a nomad, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, but I have another special connection to the Rangers. My dad is the usher right behind home plate.
Oh, really? Still?
Yeah. Yes. They're rejiggering the seating behind home plate, so I may not get to watch him on the home games because they opened it up.
Ah.
So you can see from the gate entrance all the way to the pitcher's mound.
You can get me tickets if I go down there, right?
I don't know. I haven't even got my ticket for
So we got a couple months.
Yeah. You want to when the Tigers are in town, I assume?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, okay. All right. So,
I interrupted. What were we talking about again?
I was bringing up, you know, like common sites, ESPN or CBS Sportsline is even more frustrating to me.
Yeah.
Their sites are really what I think designed for legacy usage.
Ah.
And that's what I think about. So that's when you talk about those tiny touch points like that. And with a mouse, an 8 to 10 point font is not that big of an interference, even though you can. There's tests, and I don't have one handy off the top of my head, where, you know, the smaller the point, the higher the range of errors are. You know, you have accuracy.
The more likely you are to miss it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want your users to do that, because that'll just cause them to be frustrated.
Yeah.
And so, like, in an e-commerce site, that's direct money.
Right.
If you're talking about a line of business application, that's lost productivity, which also affects the bottom line.
Right.
It's not a revenue thing. It's more of a cost overhead thing.
Yeah.
And as somebody who did my whole graduate research on, like, activity-based costing models for energy consumption, squeezing out every penny means a big deal to me.
Mm.
And, you know, looking at those things. So it's like one of the things that's been common over the years is the hover thing for menus or hidden content.
Uh-huh.
So you maybe mouse over something and a little flyout will happen. Or you think about a menu that kind of just cascades down. And you got to be very careful not to, that very last one's what you want, to not overshoot and just hit 2 pixels off and the whole menu go away.
Yep.
And you wind up hitting that interstitial ad or something that's right behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, you're off on some site you don't want to go to. And so you can, studies have like shown, watch people, they tend to like slow down to get there. And instead of going straight to a point,
mm-hmm.
you wind up going over to the right and down to hit that target point you want. So not only you can't really do that with touch on these devices, because, I mean, someone can pick up the distance to the fingers. Like if you got a Kinect kind of thing set
up
with it.
It's hard to distinguish between.
It's not something that's common right now. But
and an actual click.
But like with the pen that comes with the stylus, that comes with the Surface Pro, it actually can pick it up. It's just off the screen, for example. And I think there's some connectivity things going on there. I don't know the technical piece, but... So technically they could maybe mimic the mouse hover, but you got to think about that. Is that really something you want to do? And can browsers really guess if this is the action you want if it's a hover? Like you think about if you're hovering over a link, it may change to an underline or a different color based on your CSS.
Right.
But do you really want that with the touch experience?
Right.
So it can also kind of go back and help fix legacy sites as well.
Now you have a library designed for... the touch interface in HTML5.
I officially released it this morning. I still call it early alpha, and it's it was born out of the fact that I'm doing all these mobile first, touch first web interfaces these days. And like I said, Apple's got their touch standards. Well, Microsoft released an MS Pointer API, and they did that because Apple was really kind of tight, proprietary about that touch thing. So when they released that, They designed it with their specific purposes in mind for the iPad and the iPhone, basically. And so Google came along for Android, and they basically reverse engineered it, if you will. They just looked at the functionality and they wrote the thing. And so there's actually a spec out there for the Touch API in W3C, but it's kind of just floating in limbo, and mostly because Apple's not really being cooperative, to put it bluntly. And so when Microsoft looked at this, when they were looking and thinking about Windows 8 and IE10, they did a whole lot of research on how touch actually needs to work. They did a lot of stuff like if you can actually see it on the iPad. You put your finger down, and there's a little lag between the element moving with your finger,
mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of logic and stuff that has to go on under the gory stuff that, right. that I don't have to worry about, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. But you can see that lag. And so Microsoft wanted to, their target is 1 millisecond lag, which is just incredible.
Yeah.
They're down in like the 15 to 20-second millisecond lag.
Hmm.
And that may not sound like a lot because you're thinking about milliseconds, 10 milliseconds, who cares?
But it is noticeable.
Well, if you just sit there and like move your finger around the screen after a certain amount of distance, if you think about it, if you just stretched out, distance-wise, over the course of like 30 seconds or something, you're talking about maybe a 10 to 15 centimeter difference.
I see.
So you can really see it as I play with some of this stuff, testing this library out. I've really seen like over time the little boxes getting further and further away from my finger and the actions that I want them to follow.
Mm.
So that's kind of interesting. And that's going to be platform device specific,
right.
you know. And it's like they've got it optimized really nicely, and the Surface does a good job with it. But if you've got a slow ARM processor, or even maybe an i3 with a gigabyte or something like that on there, it's probably going to be slower than the Surface. But if you got an i7 with 12 gigs of RAM, it's probably going to be better. That kind of thing. It depends on the
right.
processors,
sure.
the GPU that's built in,
all
that kind of stuff.
Stuff going on.
Yeah, it's all kind of under the covers for you. But you kind of, it's one of those things you can really notice it,
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And there's some videos evidently out on YouTube that kind of compare some of the lag times and stuff. But,
okay.
So you got to think about those when you're...
So what does your library do?
Well, okay, so I said there's the Touch API, and then there's the MS Pointer API. And there's several JavaScript libraries that I've kind of used over the last few years to kind of help with some of the gestures and stuff against the Touch API. And then I found a few little libraries that were kind of toying around with the MS Pointer. And that really wasn't... That wasn't even included in the release candidate of Windows 8, some of the stuff. It was, but not the full set. They added... MS Gesture when it actually was released in August.
Hmm.
So there's a few libraries out on GitHub I found that kind of wrapped around it, but nothing that really bridged the gap between the two that I could find, so that you wouldn't have to worry about if it was an iPad, or you didn't have to worry about if it was say an Android device or Windows 8 Touch device.
Okay.
And what would actually work and wouldn't work. And so somebody who I really needed something to do that, because I wanted to make sure it would work consistently across everything, and I didn't want to rely on mouse events, because they actually fire after the touch events.
Okay.
So there's a lag there built in.
Mm.
It's a necessity. If you get into the details, it's kind of a necessity to do that as a last fallback. But so I really want to take advantage of it. The other thing, too, is the mouse events don't provide enough information to easily calculate if the person's rotating their fingers or pinching to
right.
zoom or pinch zoom kind of thing, or they don't really pick up multiple things, because you
right.
think about a mouse as one point,
yep.
but now we can touch 10 points on the Surface.
Okay.
And so the MS Pointer will pick up all 10 of those points and give you information on where all 10 of those fingers are going.
Okay.
And it'll let you know which one's the initial touch point and that kind of stuff, so you can track it.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of information coming, and I haven't fully digested all this stuff that's coming up, right? So,
but you have an abstraction layer on top of that.
So what I've done is I've put a gesture layer of abstraction on top of it. So you just write against my layer,
uh-huh.
and I try to worry about what's going on behind the scenes.
Oh, okay. So you're trying to simplify.
So you don't have to worry about touch or pointer or whatever. You don't okay. have to worry about how they actually work. You just basically you just create a new deep tissue object. You pass in a DOM element or a node list.
Okay.
Like if you do query selector all, you get a node list. If you do query selector, you get a single element. It'll
use,
work with
I
both
I just use jQuery. I use a dollar sign.
Well, I've used jQuery a lot, and I'm actually trying to purge it out of my stack.
Really?
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a big library, and I know they're trimming a lot of the fat, and I don't know how
it's
going to go.
So
no, it's not going to get cached on mobile phones.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Yeah, so especially on phones, they've got a limit of that they'll actually cache things. So I think the limit's still like 26K after it's un-gzipped. So it's not the gzip size, it's the un-gzip. And jQuery is around 90 kilobytes minimized, I think.
Right.
So that's not going to cache. So if you don't have a single page architecture, every single page request is going to pull jQuery down.
I see.
If you're doing jQuery mobile, jQuery mobile is going to come down.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, you decided to throw jQuery UI, which is really bad on phones, by the way.
Right.
It's going to suck all that down. And any other library that's over 26K is going to suck that down, every single page request. Images are the same way. That's another big thing you got to think about.
Right.
I wrote a blog post kind of dogging on Jack in the Box, this new mobile site. They had 8 hero images in there that were around 400K a piece.
Uh-huh.
And so it was taking a long time to load even over my home files.
Interesting.
Yeah. So these are things I think about.
We don't have Jack in the Box up there.
Well, I don't have them in Philly either, so, but I did grow up around Rural. So.
All right, so let me just let me help me understand this. So there's the device itself supports touch,
right?
And the browser has a JavaScript engine, and that JavaScript engine supports touch, which is essentially the same way that it supports mouse movements. So the mouse
right.
user moves the mouse around, the operating system tells the browser that the mouse is moving and the user's clicked on it, and the
right.
browser reacts to that, and the JavaScript engine
it'll trigger the
fires
events.
An event, and you can tap into that event.
Right.
Same thing
so it'll,
with touch,
it'll give
right?
you the event chai, just like the mouse gives you the event object, and it gives you the XY coordinates on different places.
Okay.
You'll get that kind of stuff and a lot more with the touch. You'll get touches and
okay.
all kinds of other stuff.
So
that's
the
going
JavaScript
on.
API has events that will respond to
right.
when the user has pinched, mm-hmm. rotated, multi-touched, whatever the touch gestures
the,
are.
The Apple products will do the gestures.
Okay.
The Microsoft IE10 will do the gestures.
Uh-huh.
Android will not do gestures.
Okay.
I haven't got rotate and pinch zoom support for Chrome and Android, the ones that don't support the Apple gestures at this point.
Okay.
Because it's a lot of math, and like I said, I've only spent about 20 to 25 hours putting this library together.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And there's some more there's some more optimizations I need to do. I want to tweak the demos to make them even more representative of a real application.
Okay. And the different libraries or different browsers implement these JavaScript engines differently. Is your abstraction layer trying to handle those differences, abstract that away from the user, like
right.
jQuery, similar with a jQuery.
Exactly. You can think about it. And actually, when I write JavaScript libraries, I follow the jQuery pattern that they do with their whole thing, so
okay.
it's extensible.
Okay.
And everything, and it's also nice because I don't have to do a new operator. You just pass it in, call it, and it creates a new object. It's kind of cool. But so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make it so you just have to learn my library, which should be dirt simple. It's
right.
an object with several methods. So I have a move method. And all you got to do is pass a callback to that move method. That callback will get executed on every move.
Ah, okay.
And on the tap method, when the user taps the screen, your callback will get executed.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about all the math and stuff that's going on.
Okay.
Or how to deal with the MS pointer, MS gesture stuff, or the Apple gesture stuff going on.
Okay.
I just fire these callbacks, and your callback will get called. I'll pass you the event information
okay.
along with stuff. And my examples, I'm trying to show you how to do like CSS transforms to show how to move things around
right.
if that's what you want to do or everything. So
maybe resizing objects or things.
Right. And so it's hard to, one of the things about debugging and developing against touch in this situation on a device like especially like the iPad, I don't have developer tools.
Right.
Like in browsers, they all have F12 tools, except on like the iPad and other tablets, for example, or phones. So I have to echo out stuff.
Right.
And I can't write to console log because I can't really read that. So I have to actually echo it out to the screen.
That's
so you're going to see a lot of diagnostic stuff coming through.
That's the way our ancestors used to debug applications.
Right. So at this point, I've got a lot of noise echoing out at me built
right.
into the library just because it's still really what I call early alpha.
Okay.
And you were mentioning jQuery. One of my early plans is to make some jQuery methods to extend jQuery to wrap around this to make it easier to deal with for jQuery developers. But at the same time, I encourage people to try to start learning to do JavaScript without jQuery. I love jQuery, don't get me wrong. And I've built tons and tons of great applications with jQuery. But I, as somebody who's really trying to build web applications that are close to native, I can feel the performance differences.
I see.
And that's one of the things that I'm really striving after is a really high-performance experience.
Can we see some of this touch stuff that you've been
doing? Absolutely. I'd love to show you off because it's a very simple, quick demo. So
let's take a look at these devices here.
Sure.
So what do you have here?
Okay, so I have three devices on the table. This is a brand-new Surface Pro, and this is an iPad 2, and this is my Nokia Lumia 920. And so we'll look at this on the different platforms here. I want to start off here with the Surface. And so I actually have a nice little site set up to demonstrate this off with some instructions, and I've got documentation on GitHub, just trying to walk you through with it. So let's just start with the taps. So I've got basically three different tap gestures, just a simple like single tap, like you would just hit a button or something like that. And I built in double tap, and there's a little interesting story behind that. Microsoft actually had a double tap gesture in the library to begin with, and they pulled it out. And so what they said was the way the pointer model really works is it gets a pointer for every finger touch. And so the second one is technically a second finger touching. And they were having problems trying to figure out how to differentiate that.
They said it's not too hard to just write the logic to pick up two different taps and put them together. And that's what's going on. Because I could literally do this, and that would be two fingers. But it's still technically a double tap, so that's where the problem came from. And then I've got a tap hold. So you can think about that maybe launching a context menu or something like that. If that's kind of a common experience there. Let's see, we've got move. If it'll load for me. Oh, I hope I haven't lost my internet connection. Oh, it's all four there. Okay, so I can move these elements around. I got a little jerky animation here. I'm going to kind of clean that up. I just kind of put these in there for testing. So I've got two different move elements, and I could move them both independently like that. That works just fine. And that's really fun. And then I've got a horizontal and vertical, so if I go left and right with this one, it's only going to go follow my finger up and down. Mm. So it's got like a governor on it, if you will. See, the same for that. And so this one goes left and right. And so that will work out pretty good. And then you've just got a bunch of notices. That's great. And so here's the rotate gesture. So I put two fingers down. So it won't work with one because it fires off the gesture thing. And so that picks up on that. And then we've got swipe, so I can take it to the right. And I've got to be careful here because I haven't got the brakes on the inertia. So the way the MS pointer works, it actually has an inertia event that'll fire. Mm-hmm. And it'll if I swipe it really hard, so if I do this, it just shoots it off the screen. So when an inertia event fires, it actually means that the finger was lifted, and it's going to pick up the momentum, and it's going to start just firing events after that as if it was actually being moved at a progressive rate.
Right.
So you got to, I'm going to have to show how to put brakes on there with that. So okay, and then so the swipe can go left, right, up, and down, and it's just a matter of doing that. I got to be real soft with it here. Well, there it goes. Anyway, so. And then the last one I got in here is scale. So that's a pinch zoom situation. So you can make it go big and tall and everything. I haven't got anything where you can specify like a limit of scaling, but I may put that in there later, depending on what I do. So, and of course, all these will work on the iPad as well. And I tried it on my iPhone the other day. I haven't tried it in a couple of days, and everything was working copacetic there too. So, so this is working against the Touch API instead. So tap. Double tap, tap hold, and you can see the move.
Nice. So you're just applying, you're responding to these events, and then you're applying CSS3 transforms to do some of the stuff.
For the demos, I am, yeah.
Okay.
You can do whatever you want to with it, really. The demos, so, I'm showing you how to move
them.
So
your library just wraps the events themselves.
That's the goal.
You want to write.
And but yeah, exactly. And I'm also trying to, like I said, trying to provide, show you how to do the transforms.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And it also supports mouse events, too. I don't think we really said that. I have the fallback to mouse events, so it actually works on desktops, too.
Oh, I see.
So
this is deeptissue.js. That's the name of your library?
Yeah, deeptissue.js and deeptissue.com. Deeptissuejs.com will take you to this particular website we're showing right here on the devices.
Okay.
So, and I will be updating it periodically because I actually am using it on real stuff I'm working on. So, David, you can access all this at deeptissuejs.com.
Okay.
It's got these demos live up there, a little explanation of what's going on with the project, and I've got the source code on GitHub and free to download it. First question I got when I told some folks this morning was, what's the license model? I honestly didn't even think about that, so I got to figure out what I would do there.
Yeah.
But feel free to download it. Give me feedback. Just understand it's very early alpha. And it's going to hopefully get better and expand a little bit, and we'll see where it goes. But hopefully it'll be something very useful for everybody so that they can build really good mobile and modern applications.
Very cool. Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's been great. Good luck with the Spartans.
Go green.
All right.